Either. Okay. You can double record it just to be sure.
Okay. So it's
since we've taken away from your time, we will not interrupt you.
Oh, all right.
To make sure we hear what you've prepared.
Okay, it's the 28th of October, Shabbat. And we're reading Leviticus 13, verse 29 to 59, and Isaiah 7, verse 20. All right, on the board. 29 actually to the end of the chapter, and then Isaiah 7 to 24. Okay, so before we read it, maybe a little bit of an overview to remind you of where we're actually in. What are we reading currently? What is Leviticus 13 about?
Plagues and leprosy and skin diseases.
All kinds of skin diseases that all fall under one term in Hebrew, tzara'at. So that's what we're reading. And actually, the next chapter is also about skin diseases. So here we are, Leviticus 13 and 14 are both about skin diseases. What was the chapter before about, Leviticus 12?
The way you take new mothers have to be.
Exactly, with childbirth. The impurity after childbirth. So I'll write it down. Impurity after childbirth and impurity with, skin diseases. The next chapter, Leviticus 15, that we are not doing today, Leviticus 14 neither, but is about flows in the genital area. All right. Before that, we have Leviticus 11, and this is actually one group of laws. I'll show it in a little bit, and this is about all the animals that you shouldn't be eating because they are impure. Okay. So all these laws, Leviticus 11 to 15, are about impurity. Different kinds of impurity. And actually, there aren't that many kinds of impurity. If you look at it, we have one, those from the genital area, two, skin diseases, although it's a variety, three, childbirth, and then here we have different animals and the carcasses that you cannot touch. But that's about it. So it's very limited. Now,
you're calling it unclean as against impure, are you, Nick?
Come here.
Well, which is it? Impure or unclean or both?
Ceremonially unclean.
Ceremonially unclean.
But whatever ceremonially unclean means. Right? Okay, so we have a block of laws that are all about impurity. What is Leviticus 10 about before you have the discussion on impurity?
Holy fire.
Yeah, it's the fire. You remember the two sons of Aaron? They bring what is called strange fire in front of the Lord, and they are killed right there on the spot. It's quite an ordeal. One of the impurities that isn't mentioned in Leviticus 11 to 15 is a corpse. It's mentioned in Numbers 19. But so suddenly you have dead people laying inside the courtyard. And so it raises up this question, what do we do when there is an impure body laying right here in the courtyard? Okay. So that's Leviticus 10. Leviticus 10. In front, the biggest tent. The story about the sons of Aaron. Now, if you go to Leviticus 16, on the other side of our impurity laws, let's read the first two verses of Leviticus 16. They start like this. The Lord spoke to Moses, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, who died when they drew too close to the presence of the Lord. Okay, it makes immediate connection with Leviticus 10.
Yeah.
So actually, if you didn't have the impurity laws, you would just continue the story reading. Also, in verse 2, it says, "The Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he is not to come at will in the shrine behind the curtain in front of the cover that is upon the ark, lest he die, for I appear in the cloud over the cover." So here's a death threat. As we saw that the sons of Aaron died, here we have another threat of if you don't take care, then you might die. And then in verse 12, we have another extra linguistic marker where it says, chapter 16, verse 12, "And he shall take a panful of glowing coals scooped from the altar." And the pan also appears in 10, verse 1, where the sons of Aaron actually take the pan. And it's the only two occurrences in Leviticus where this pan occurs. So obviously, there's a connection.
And interesting, in the Numbers story, the rebellious people is also a pan.
Mm-hmm. Also a pan. Right. This pan?
I think so.
Okay. I didn't look it up. But so you can see that there are very clear connections from Leviticus 16 to Leviticus 10, which makes sure that you see this as a separate block of impurity laws. So it says Leviticus 11 to 15 apart. Actually, all of these chapters, Leviticus 11 to 15, end with, "This is the law of," and then comes what is. "This is the law of she who gives birth to a child. This is the law for those who has a skin disease. This is the law for those who have a flow." So that's how all these laws end. Right. Now within these impurity laws, we'll look a little closer. Now we'll just look at these chapters. This is the funniest chapter. It falls a little bit outside our other impurity laws. Why? Well, it's because Leviticus 12 to 15 share very common characteristics. First of all, these impurities are contagious. If you give birth to a child, then your impurity can go from one person to another. The same with skin diseases, the same with flows from a genital area. You don't read about contagious animals. For example, the animals that are impure, they are just impure. You're not supposed to eat it. Doesn't say what you have to do when you eat it. You're not supposed to eat it. That's the rule. Then in Leviticus 12 to 15, you have purification through rites. There are very specific rites that you can do, and then you will be pronounced pure in the end, or clean. So you don't find that again in the first part of Leviticus 11, where you just have the commandment not to eat these animals. Then also, becoming impure is not prohibited. These impurities. Of course, you're not prohibited to give birth to a child. Yeah. You're not prohibited to get a skin disease. It just happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a priest, a layperson, a king, it just happens to you. And the same with flows from a genital area. It's not in your control. Maybe childbirth is the most in your control. But even that, you're not prohibited from becoming impure. It's not a bad thing. It's not a sin. While Leviticus 11, you are told not to eat these types of animals. So there is a very clear prohibition. So that's why Leviticus 11 is a little bit different. Actually, Leviticus 11 is divided into two parts. The first part, verse 2 to 23, is about not eating certain animals. And the second part is about carcasses. And what you have to do when you touch them, and how you can become impure. And so this part actually is much closer to these laws, because there are purification rites that you can do to become pure.
And they're also involved, right? Because when you do a sacrifice, you have a carcass.
Right.
So the other one's part of becoming pure again involves sacrifice.
Right, I never thought about that.
So
I don't know if that counts as a carcass, though. If you sacrifice.
I've been reading this recently, but don't you have to kill the animal in a certain place, and the person that takes out the animal is actually impure? And it's a different priest that does the other part.
It's with certain sacrifices. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't remember which ones.
It's one of those details if you're not doing this stuff.
Right.
You're not thinking about
right. You think about it as a thought instead of as a practice. Okay. So is it clear why Leviticus 11 is a little bit funny?
Mm-hmm.
little bit different from the rest. Maybe in a few weeks we'll also see it in another part where there's a funny chapter and they are actually linked.
So why is it there?
The Leviticus 11?
Yeah.
Talk about it later. Okay.
You just set us up, so.
Right, but I'll set you up for over in a few weeks, because what I would like to demonstrate, maybe in a few weeks, is that chapter 17 and 18 to 20 are actually similarly structured with a very specific purpose. This is about impurity, this is about holiness, and Leviticus 17 is also a little bit of a funny duck. And there are connections between Leviticus 11, about carcass, for example, and Leviticus 17. But that's what I said, and I didn't say it, so we're not going to talk about it. Okay. Leviticus 12 to 15. There are connections between these two chapters, Leviticus 12 and 15. And also this, we will see, I'll write it down because it's fun. We will see exactly the same with Leviticus 17, 18, 19, and 20. If you are familiar with Leviticus, you know that these chapters are almost the same. They give a list of forbidden sexual relationships and the prohibition of sacrificing your children to Molech. So they're very similar. Everyone notices it. If you read it, there's no doubt you see the connection between it. And Leviticus 19 is then in the center for some reason about holiness, all under the title of the first verse saying, "Be holy for I am holy." So it's the center. So the same here. You have Leviticus 12 to 15. There are a very strong connection. Not strong. There are a few connections that I would like to mention. First, both concern the genital area. Childbirth flows from the genital area. Quite obvious. Secondly, both distinguish between male and female. This one distinguishes between the impurity after giving birth to a boy or a girl. There are different lengths. This one distinguishes also between the flows from a man and the flows from a woman. So you have a similarity that you don't find in the skin diseases. Skin diseases, it's the same if you're a man or a woman. Except for if you have a beard.
Well, you may be a woman with a beard.
I didn't say anything. Then finally, maybe not finally, first I mentioned both concern the genital area, both distinguish between zachar and nekeva, and then both mention menstruation. Leviticus 12 opens with it. I'll read Leviticus 12, verse 1. Verse 2, actually. In the, 1 is just the opening saying, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the Israelite people, thus, when a woman at childbirth bears a male, she shall be unclean 7 days. She shall be unclean as at the time of her menstrual infirmity." You don't have that frequently a mention of menstruation, but here it's mentioned in the beginning of chapter 12, and then we go to the end of chapter 15. In the final verse, let's read from verse 32. 15, verse 32, it says, "Such is the ritual concerning him who has a discharge, concerning him who has an emission of semen and becomes unclean thereby, and concerning her who is in menstrual infirmity," concerning anyone, male or female, who has a discharge. Okay, so it mentions again menstrual infirmity, and it's very interesting. Here in chapter 12, it is in the beginning, verse 2, and here in Leviticus 15, it is in the very last verse in the end. So, since it only appears here in Leviticus, it appears twice more. Interestingly, chapter 18 and chapter 20. Okay? But we're not talking about that. But you see that there are strong connections between these two impurities. And finally, both contain a warning. Now, warnings in the impurity laws are quite unique because, as I said, you're allowed to become impure. But in Leviticus 12, verse 4, this is what it says. "She, who is impure, shall remain in the state of blood purification for 33 days. She shall not touch any consecrated thing, nor enter the sanctuary until her period of purification is completed." Okay, here's a prohibition. Namely, don't go to anything that is holy. Normally you don't find these prohibitions. And a similar prohibition you find in chapter 15. So you don't find this in chapter 13 and 14. So Leviticus 15, verse 31. It says, "You shall put the Israelites on guard against their uncleanness, lest they die through their uncleanness by defiling my tabernacle which is among them." Okay, so here are all kinds of parallels between Leviticus 12 and 15 that envelop the laws about skin diseases. So maybe there is a special importance in the skin diseases, and we are currently reading the skin diseases, so I thought it's worth it to take a look at this. So now, finally, Leviticus 13 and 14. No, we're not reading yet. I'll erase this. As I said, Leviticus 13 and 14 are about skin diseases. Chapter 14 is about the purification ritual. Chapter 13 starts with, you have skin diseases on human beings. On humans. That is verse 1 to 44. And then we have 47 to 59, skin diseases on fabric. And it mentions all kinds of fabric, 47 to 59. Then we have 14, verse 1. Oh, right, here is 13, verse 13. Then we have 14, verse 1 to 20. It's the purification ritual. For humans. Okay. Then on 21 to 32, we have special laws concerning the poor. Meaning, if you can't bring the sacrifices, a lamb, you bring a bird, a dove. And then it ends with the skin diseases in a house. And so you see that skin disease becomes a very funny word. I mean, we have skin diseases on fabric, of course. Tzaraat. Tzaraat on fabric, tzaraat in houses, and then tzaraat on human beings. Okay, so that's why skin disease is not the best word, because it's not only on the skin.
And nor is leprosy, which is how it often gets translated.
Right, right. So that's why...
What would be the best word?
Well, it's a collection of skin diseases, so I don't know.
No, but if you're looking for a word that could be used in all those contexts, it's like, what would you choose? Would be
so something that is mold, something that's a skin disease, and some mold also on cloth.
Yeah. Bacteria, or an infection. Or
infection? Right. Because do you speak about infections also?
No,
about
fungus.
Fungus?
But was it a fungus? I don't know.
Yeah.
Might be.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Fungus is
mold. Mold is, yeah.
Right. Like a fungus could grow on a wall and fabric.
For human,
always
I call it infection. Fungal infection.
But you would call it
a fungal infection.
Okay, so we just have trouble.
We have two words.
Yeah, we have two, they have one.
So the word that's used throughout in Hebrew is sarat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Okay, now... So this is what we're looking at, chapter 13 and 14, but actually we're only reading part of on humans and then fabric. That's what we're going to read. We haven't read yet. But if you look at Leviticus 13, it's subdivided as following. It has all kinds of different skin diseases that it mentions. For example, it mentions a swelling in verse 2 to 8. It mentions a negatzarat in 9 to 17. A boil, we read last week, in 18 to 23. 24 to 28 is a burn. So these are all types of different skin diseases or issues from which can come skin diseases. And then we start on our reading, which is if you have tzaraat on your head or in your beard. And a rash, if you can translate it as rash in verse 38 to 39. And then about losing hair in 40 verse 44. And then about the behavior of someone who has this skin disease. So that's what we're going to read. We're going to read the last four things, namely the disease on the head and the beard, the rash, losing of hair, and then the behavior of those who have skin diseases. So, without further ado, we will read the parashat, Leviticus 13, verse 29 to 59.
When a man or a woman has a plague on the head or on the chin, then the Kohen is to examine the plague, and behold, if its appearance is deeper than the skin, and the hair in it is yellow and thin, then the Kohen is to pronounce him unclean. It's a scab, sa'arat, of the head or the chin. If the Kohen examines the plague of the scab, behold, its appearance is no deeper than the skin, and there is no black hair within, then the Kohen is to isolate the person infected with the scab for 7 days. On the seventh day, the Kohen is to examine the plague, and behold, if the scab has not spread and there's no yellow hair in it, and the appearance of the scab is no deeper than the skin, then he should be shaved, but he's not to shave the scab. The Kohen is then to isolate the one who has the scab for 7 more days. On the seventh day, the Kohen is to examine the scab, and behold, if the scab has not spread in the skin, and its appearance is no deeper than the skin, then the Kohen shall pronounce him clean. He is to wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab spreads on his skin after his cleansing, then the Kohen is to examine him, and behold, if the scab has spread in the skin, the Kohen may not look for the yellow hair. He is unclean. But if he sees the scab is stopped and the black hair has grown in it, the scab is healed and he is clean. The Kohen shall pronounce him clean. One of you read the next bit, starting at 38.
When a man or a woman has white spots on the skin, the priest is to examine them, and if the spots are dull white, it is a harmless rash that has broken out on the skin. That person is clean. When a man has lost his hair and is bald, is clean. If he has lost his hair from the front of his scalp and has a bald forehead, he is clean. But if he has a reddish white sore on his forehead, it is an infectious disease breaking out on his head or forehead. The priest is to examine him, and if the swollen sore on his head or forehead is reddish white like an infectious skin disease, the man is diseased and is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him unclean because of the sore on his head. Is it up to...
Yeah, maybe someone can read now verse 45 till the end.
Mm-hmm. As for the diseased person who has the infection, his clothes must be torn, the hair of his head must be unbound, he must cover his mustache, and he must call out unclean, unclean. The whole time he has the infection, he will be continually unclean. He must live in isolation, and his place of residence must be outside the camp. When the garment has a diseased infection in it, whether a wool or linen garment, or the warp or the woof of the linen or the wool, or in leather or anything made of leather, if the infection in the garment or leather or warp or woof or any article of leather is yellowish, green, or reddish, it is a diseased infection and must be shown to the priest. The priest is to examine and then quarantine the article with the infection for 7 days. He must then examine the infection on the seventh day. If the infection has spread in the garment, or in the warp, or in the woof, or in the leather, whatever the article into which the leather was made, the infection is a malignant disease, it is unclean. He must burn the garment, or the warp, or the woof, whether linen, or wool, or any article of leather which has the infection in it. Because it is a malignant disease, it must be burned up in the fire. But if the priest examines it, and the infection has not spread in the garment, or in the warp, or in the woof, or in any article of leather, the priest is to command that they wash whatever has the then examine it after the infection has been washed out. And if the infection has not changed its appearance, even though the infection has not spread, it is unclean. You must burn it up in the fire. It is a fungus, whether on the back side or the front side of the article. But if the priest has examined it and the infection has faded after it has been washed, he is to tear it out of the garment or the leather or the warp or the woof. Then if it still appears again in the garment or in the warp or the woof or in any article, it is an outbreak. Whatever has the infection in it, you must burn up in the fire. But the garment or the warp or the woof or any article of the leather which you wash and the infection disappears from it is to be washed a second time and it will be clean. This is the law of the diseased infection of the garment, of wool or linen, or warp or woof, or any article of leather, for pronouncing it clean or unclean.
Thank you.
Wow.
Riveting,
yeah.
Right?
What?
Riveting.
I'm so glad you kept specifying, or the warp, or the woof.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Or the leather.
I love that translation.
Or any kind of leather.
Yeah.
Garment.
Yeah.
And I love the word quarantine. I've got isolate, I think.
Right.
I love that version. What is it, Sheila?
It's net.
What?
Net.
Right. So this is something different, huh? I mean, if you read this, I think you immediately realize that there's a different culture. if you read Jesus' words, sometimes you can look at it from your own life pretty quickly, but this is different. This is something that we're not familiar with. And so I'm always reminded of those books that teach you how to read the Bible. And one of the first questions is that you should ask, what do you learn about God? Okay, so that's a question that applies also for this chapter. What do we learn about God? So we'll keep that question in mind as we look at just two verses that I would like to focus on, and that is what the person with tzara'at has to do in verse 45 and 46. In my translation, it says, the person who has the skin disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head be, I always say this wrong, disheveled?
Disheveled.
I knew it. Okay. And he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So I wanted to look at this. Why would a person need to tear his clothes? So you have a skin disease. Why tear your clothes? When would you tear your clothes? And what is this with your hair? To let it run wild or disheveled. And that, what does that mean? So
the tearing of clothes is linked, at least in Jewish tradition, with dying. You rip your garments.
When?
At a funeral.
Okay.
Everyone rips their.
Right.
Here this is lifrom, not lifrom.
No, but that lifrom, yeah, exactly. So
to undo the hems, like make it start unraveling.
Right. So let's take a look at that. Where is this word used? And what we see, for example, it's used in Leviticus 10, verse 6. Now, Leviticus 10, what's Leviticus 10 about? It's before the impurity... Sorry, I took it off. It's before all the impurity laws, the chapter before. Aaron's sons that bring the strange fire.
And who get killed.
And who get killed. Okay, Leviticus 10, verse 6.
Which of the verses you're actually focusing on at the moment? You said just now we're going to...
I was looking at 13, verse 45 and 46. What the person who has the skin disease needs to do. So in Leviticus 10, verse 6, after the sons of Aaron have been killed, it says, and Moses said to Aaron and to his sons Eleazar and Itamar, do not dishevel your hair, and do not tear your investments. Or your vestment. Why did I mean investments? Did I say that? Your vestments. Or you will die, and wrath will strike all the congregation. So somehow, after the death of his sons, this is what he's not supposed to do. He's not supposed to dishevel his hair, and it uses the same language, and he's not supposed to here in my translation it says tear your clothes,
but
and it uses the same word. Okay, so this is what he's not supposed to. It's not that he has tzarat or the skin disease. It's in a different context.
They've been killed for producing unholy fire before a holy God. And basically, they're not allowed to mourn him. They're
right.
Not allowed to do any of the mourning things that
right.
you
so,
do in a normal death.
So these are probably mourning rituals that
right.
you would do.
Yeah.
Dishevel your hair and whatever you do with your clothes. Tear. Yeah.
What's it called when you rip your clothes at a funeral?
What's it called?
If there's a special word for it.
Rend?
Mm-hmm.
In Hebrew?
In Hebrew, yeah. What's the word for it? It happens all the time. Every funeral I ever go to, it's written. There's a special word for the rite or the procedure of doing it.
Anyone?
Sorry, I'll just find out.
Bummer. Yeah, that's what I... Good
mm-hmm.
guess.
What did she say?
She said prima, but it was a guess, so we won't record it. Okay.
It's the same root.
Right, so it's the same thing that shouldn't be done that the person with skin disease has to do that he isn't allowed to do. We see something similar in Leviticus 21, verse 10. Leviticus 21 is about... about the priests, special laws concerning the priest. And if you read, for example, in verse 1, in 21 verse 1, it says, "The Lord said to Moses, speak to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, no one shall defile himself for a dead person among his relatives." Okay, so this is the context about burying someone and therefore becoming defiled. So that's what the priests are not supposed to do. And then a little further in verse 5, for example, it says, "They shall not make bald spots upon their heads or shave off the edges of their beards or make any gashes in their flesh." Probably, again, mourning rituals. And in verse 10, we read, "The priest who is exalted above his fellows, on whose head the anointing oil has been poured and who has been consecrated to wear the vestments, shall not dishevel his hair, nor tear his vestments." In verse 11, "He shall not go where there is a dead body." Okay, so...
Where was that?
21, verse 10 and 11. So what is the context here in Leviticus 21? It's again, mourning for the dead. So what we have in the skin diseases are rituals that you would otherwise use for mourning a dead person. So actually, they are ordered to do these rituals. Rituals that you would otherwise do if you lost someone. Very interesting. Now the last one, about covering your mustache, or your upper lip, as some translations will say it. Let's go to Ezekiel 24. So this is also what the person with skin disease is supposed to do. Cover his... lip or his mustache. Ezekiel 24, verse 17. "Sigh, but not aloud. Make no mourning for the dead. Bind on your turban, put on your sandals on your feet. Do not cover your upper lip or eat the bread of mourners." The context is quite clear, right? It says, make no mourning for the dead. Then what you should do is bind on your turban, festive. Put your sandals on your feet, don't take them off. Do not cover your upper lip. So this is what you do. Again, all these things that we see the person with a skin disease has to do, we find actually in mourning rituals for the dead Also in verse 22, if we continue in Ezekiel, the same chapter, Ezekiel 24, verse 22, it says, "And you shall do as I have done. You shall not cover your upper lip or eat the bread of mourners." Right. So apparently, there's a connection between skin diseases and death. They have something in common. And there are more indications, actually, that skin diseases and death have something in common. Let's read about Miriam, who got skin disease, in Numbers. Numbers 12, verse 10. In Numbers 12, verse 10, it says the following. When the cloud went away from over the tent, Miriam had become, in my translation it says leprous, skin disease, as white as snow. And Aaron turned upwards to Miriam and saw that she had the skin disease. Then Aaron said to Moses, "O my Lord, do not punish us for a sin that we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like one stillborn, whose flesh is half consumed when it comes out of its mother's womb." So here, the skin disease is compared to a stillborn child. Okay? You actually find the same in Deuteronomy 24, verse 8 to 9, but we won't read that, but you find something similar right there. Now, there are more connections between skin diseases and death. For example, a house with a skin disease in it, as well as a tent with a corpse in it, render the people in it impure. So another connection between tzara'at and death. Also in the purification rite, actually, for someone who has touched a corpse, and the purification rite for he or she who has a skin disease, you find the use of cedar, hyssop, and crimson. Both in Numbers 19 for the purification rite for he who has touched a corpse, as well as in Leviticus 14 for he was impure by a skin disease. Okay, so cedar, hyssop, and crimson.
What was the last one? Cedar, hyssop, and what was
and
the
crimson.
One?
Crimson.
What's crimson?
Crimson is
shani.
Yeah,
which what verse in 14 are you talking about?
14 verse 6, for example. It says, "Dip a living bird with cedar, hyssop, and crimson, and then you sprinkle
crimson.
It on the person who has to be purified."
So here, just so there it says tola'at instead of specifying tola'at.
Okay, right.
So what is crimson? I mean, I've written down crimson like the color red.
Right, right. Like
is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's a color that came from a certain worm, right?
Yeah,
right.
Snail.
So.
Right. And in both rituals, you also use living water, in the one with the corpse contamination and in the one with the skin disease. So there are actually quite strong connections between skin disease and death. And maybe skin disease is a very graphic reminder of death. Even though death isn't mentioned, corpse contamination is mentioned in Leviticus 11 to 15, you have in the center, you have these skin diseases that in many aspects refers to death. And we've talked about impurity before. Since there are only a few impurities, anthropologists started looking at them and said, there are only a few. There must be some type of system behind it. Because, for example, if you gash yourself and blood comes out, you're not impure. Blood doesn't make you impure. It's only related to skin diseases, flows from the genital area, after childbirth, corpse contamination. That's it. So what do these have in common? And then they came up with the answer that this is about death and mortality. They all in some way refer to mortality and death. And as you are impure, you're not supposed to come close to the tabernacle. meaning God has nothing to do with mortality or death. This is not his terrain. And if you want to come to him, first you have to go through these purification rites. And we see that maybe clearest, the connection between impurity and death here in the skin diseases, for example, in the two verses we just read in what a person with skin disease has to do. We don't have much time, huh? We'll go to... Are there any questions before we go to Isaiah 7?
So, it seems pretty obvious, like, childbirth, the flow is like a source of life, death, mortality.
Mm-hmm.
How does... I mean, obviously, corpse impurity. So, skin diseases, they would just be...
appearance of death.
Appearance,
period.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
in the house, right? It's the same appearance of whatever that moldy thing looked like. That's what happens on dead corpses, maybe. It
right.
looks like death.
Or on fabric. Actually, the language used for the fabric is the language used for a person. If it says on the front of a cloth and on the back of the cloth, it has very interesting language. It is the language of front of a head and the back. So it's funny that it's used for cloth, but the terminology is taken from skin diseases and also for cloth.
And the passage about Miriam also mentions a stillborn baby.
Right.
That's a similar appearance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So somehow, in ancient minds, skin disease and death are closely connected.
Actually, if you put it into modern thinking, if I have a piece of cloth or a piece of clothing or whatever, it does spell death. You really want that fungus out of the house fast. I had it once a year or so ago, and I had to rip out all the cupboards to get rid of the fungus and the whatever. And I can see in ancient times when you haven't got, you know, bleach squirts and whatever, that it's very simple to think, we've just got to get rid of this.
Right.
And you've got to destroy it. And if the house is really rotten with this, you put it down and start again. You don't
right.
mess around.
Yeah.
But I think the question I want is, your first question is, what do we learn about God?
So, as I said, with any impurity, you cannot come to the tabernacle.
Right.
You cannot touch any holy thing.
Right.
Why? Why is God concerned about that? Somehow that which is in the realm of death and has the smell of it is not supposed to come
That's right.
in the holy sanctuary. Mm-hmm. So I think it does teach us something or reminds us of something
of who
God is. In a negative way, but later through holiness we read it in the positive way. Okay. Isaiah 7. 7 verse 20. There aren't many verses, so we can read till the end. Would someone like to read? So there are about 5 verses. Yeah.
20 to 25?
Yes.
In that day, the Lord will use a razor hired from beyond the river, the king of Assyria, to shave your head and the hair of your legs, and to take off your beards also. In that day, a man will keep alive a young cow and 2 goats. And because of the abundance of the milk they give, he will have curds to eat. All who remain in the land will eat curds and honey. In that day, in every place where there were 1,000 vines worth 1,000 silver shekels, there will be only briars and thorns. Men will go there with bow and arrow, for all the land will be covered with briars and thorns. And as for all the hills once cultivated by the hoe, you will no longer go there for fear of the briars and thorns. They will become places where cattle are turned loose and where sheep run.
Right. So first, why would they read this part of the Haftarah together with what we just read in Leviticus 13? Right, right. The most obvious.
So it's pubic hair.
Even clipping off the beard.
My translation.
What?
Which one?
Oh, maybe Shah Haraglaim. Shah Haraglaim. Okay. Yeah. Who knows? Okay, so that's a connection. And maybe that's the only linguistic.
Specific mention of the beard.
Mm-hmm. The mention of the beard, and then the mention of shaving. But here the shaving is quite different. So the shaving of which we read is when you have this impurity, the skin disease, you would shave in order to be able to see if there were certain spots on your skin, and then you would be put away for 7 days and you would be checked. Now here the shaving is quite different. Who does the shaving?
The knife.
Well, the enemy
himself.
The enemy does it. God uses the enemy.
Right, right. Yeah. The Lord, he shaves, and the razor is the king of Assyria. Now who does he shave? I wouldn't blame you if you don't know. Because it's kind of complex. If you read in the context, this is about the king of Israel and the king of Aram joining up together to fight against Judah. And then in that time, Ahaz pays off the king of Assyria to come and attack the king of Israel and the king of Aram. And then this is what it says. On that day, the Lord will shave with a razor hired beyond the river with the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the feet, and it will take off the beard as well. Who is he shaving? Is he shaving the king of Israel and the king of Aram? Or is he shaving actually also Judah?
It's the land. He's talking about the land becoming thorns.
Right, but which land? Is it the land of Israel or the land of
Judah?
So that's the question. And when you continue reading, I don't know if there's a clear answer to that. On the one hand, you see there, it seems that there is relief. On that day, one will keep alive a young cow and two sheep, and will eat curds because of the abundance of milk that they give. For everyone that is left in the land shall eat curds and honey. So things are decently good. It's not that everything is destroyed.
Or that they'll survive.
But with an abundance...
They won't have the fields and fruit in the fields. So
because it gets destroyed.
Milk, yeah, and honey.
Okay.
Which can be grown without a field.
Right.
You can find honey and you can make milk.
So then the thing that is shaved...
But it's like flipping the promise on its head.
Mm-hmm.
Where there it's a symbol of this abundance, and now it's like a symbol of, well, you're not going to have everything else, but at least you'll survive on this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Have you not got to go back? First of all, we've got the whole Emmanuel prophecy at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for the boy knows... Before the boy knows to refuse evil and to choose good, the land of the two kings you dread will be abandoned. Adonai will bring on you, on your people, and on your father's house. Such days have never come since the days Ephraim separated from Judah, the king of Assyria. In that day, Adonai will whistle for the fly at the source of the Nile of Egypt, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit lost now.
Well, if you think of the metaphor in verse 22 of shaving, and it says, all who remain in the center of the land, I mean, Judah is pretty much, Jerusalem is in the center of the land. So it's almost like the shaving could be seen as everywhere but Jerusalem.
But is it a mourning ritual?
Or is it...
the shaving, you mean?
Shaming. It could be a shaming ritual. That when you mourn, you shame yourself.
Right, right. But if you read the two together, as they did, then maybe you can see it somehow as God will purify,
uh-huh.
or checking to purify.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you read them together, if you want to do that, as they did, otherwise they wouldn't put them together, then you would read it probably as this is God using a razor in order to check maybe conditions that are deeper than the skin.
But if he's using a razor hired beyond the river with the king of... He's hiring, in other words, he's using the enemy
mm-hmm.
as his razor.
Right, right.
And we see that in our own time very often.
Well, it's like saying this enemy attacking you is really me checking to see if you're pure underneath. That's what it is saying.
Yeah, God using an enemy to check. Or that's what the combination of the two texts would suggest. Well, we should stop because it's already time to go downstairs.
Wow, yeah.
Right, so we will continue with the skin diseases next week, but then the purification ritual for the skin diseases, which is also very interesting. But as we said, it's very good to remember who God is and who we approach, the source of life instead of the source of death. Right, let's go down.